Session number 3962, wheel number 4.
Colonel Ham, wheel 4. Now, January 1943 saw you in Ceylon, still with the KAR, where you were involved in training in preparation for the Burma campaign. What new techniques did you use to train the troops?
This is... We left Kenya, where we'd done a certain amount of training, and then we went by boat over to Colombo in a convoy. And when we got to Colombo, the whole of the, this was a complete division went. So, and then we were just spread all over the south of Ceylon. And the training there consisted of, to start with, was watermanship was a great thing, because in Burma there are rivers to be crossed and all, this is all part of the training side of it. So one had to teach the African how to cross a river and to get from one side to the other.
How did you
get swimmers. Mm-hmm. You picked out, most of them, they were pretty good swimmers, or going on a raft, or put them in a boat. If you can get hold of boats, this is the whole technique of it, you see. And this is all part of the training there. And we were just living like we did in the NFD. I mean, you're just living under trees, and the monsoon came, and so, and one just had to bear with it, whatever went on, you see. And I think this went on till about, oh, for about 2 months.
Were there any other techniques associated with jungle warfare?
Not at that stage, you see, because I think one was acclimatizing the African more to the weathers and so forth, which is slightly different, although it's the same sort of latitude, but it's a different country altogether, you see, Ceylon. And I think one was then gradually learning. One had to teach him with all this... who the Japanese were. I mean, he hadn't even seen a photograph of a Japanese. He's not a European.
How did you teach them?
Well, we had photographs, and there's a lot of pamphlets coming through, see, from the headquarters and so forth. So this is all part of their training. So you're trying to teach the chap who he was, what a Japanese was. And they were good fighters. I mean, this is the whole trouble about it. We had one or two air raids in Ceylon by the Japanese as the bombers came over night time. And eventually, we gradually moved up to the north of Ceylon, where you get the bamboo forests. And this is where the training got harder. Because believe it or not, you've still got leeches there, the same as they got in Burma. I mean, they live in the water, and so... You get an African, he'd say, "Ah, oh, I've got them thing around here," and they pull it off, and a leech comes out, you see, and this was all part of it. But
how well do you think they adapted?
Very well. I don't think they liked the Ceylonese all that much. They used to call them the green men. Well, they're small, you see. They're not Africans. This is a whole trouble. And this is... This is the, again, you see, I suppose from the technique, from the training part, is to get the Africans really established to what he's going to do and so forth. We had a visit one day from Admiral Mountbatten. He came and stood on a soapbox and said, "How do you do to all the Africans?" And they wondered who the sailor was who was commanding them. I mean, this is the African again, you see. They could always see a funny side of things. Instead of having a military man, there was an admiral with his hat on at an angle, as he used to wear it, and there he was on a soapbox addressing the Africans, you see. This is all part of it. Then eventually, at the end of this, all 5 months, 6 months training, they then crossed over to India, got on a train, and gradually went up to East India.
But by this time, you were far from
that. I was then, I'd been 7 years overseas by this time, and we were allowed to come home.
How did you find, incidentally, Sudanese regarded the presence of
the Africans? There was a lot of trouble. The trouble arose because, you see, the Selenese, they're a different race altogether, and their beliefs are different. They're Buddhists. And
how did this affect?
Well, they wouldn't see cheek by jowl. And being a small chap, a peculiar instance, they couldn't understand a Buddhist priest. These are the chaps who walk around in a saffron robe, you see, and they don't have anything at all, but they're looked after by people. They just go and put the bowl out and someone fills it up. And you try and explain that to an African, you see, you've got the hardest job of all to try and explain it to him, why these people live like it. Most of the Europeans, I mean, we didn't know ourselves, I suppose. Most of it, we had to read it and so forth, and this was life.
You must have had to learn quite a lot yourself very quickly about what was happening in the war and how to adapt to
it. Oh, yes. This is another side, and to try and teach the African what was going on in the world.
What sort of information were you getting at this time? Did you ever feel that you were being kept in the dark?
Oh, no, no. It's, I think we used to get the wireless, get the... And there was the Forces newspaper. The division produced its own newspaper. This was another side of it. So we got all the information, all the war fronts, what were going on. And you had to try and disseminate the news and put it out to the African to try and teach him exactly that the war was worldwide, you know. I mean, they were fighting in Europe, they were fighting in Russia, and we were fighting in India, and this is it, you see.
Did they grasp that, do you think?
No, I don't think so.
What about the African NCOs, who presumably were in favour of what was happening?
Well, if you show them a map of the world, I mean, it's a vast place. And even when they move from Africa to Ceylon, you see, it's another world to them, completely. And one amusing instance is trying to show an African how the tea, because some of them knew, because if they came from Uganda, tea used to grow there. But if you came from further down, all they used to grow was sisal, you see, in down in Tanganyika and so forth. But then you sort of take them around a tea plantation and say, you go pick this leaf, you go dry them, and you go make tea, you see, and this was it. And this is another side to it. Then you could also get, because Ceylon, I mean, you could buy what they used to drink, is the old tembi, this is the coconut wine, you see, to make it. And, I think basically, by and large, then one, I think the division tried to set up rest camps for these chaps up in Kandy. Somewhere for the African to go, you know. On leave. But it's a very hard job.
Yeah.
Well, you can imagine an African arriving and these little people, they really are small, Selenese. You see, average height's only about 5 foot, a lot of them.
Did they feel superior to the Selenese, do
you think? Oh, an African's very proud. Oh, yes. Yeah. Another amusing incident, they know all about elephants in Africa, where they go around in herds, but we were marching along a road one day, and there was an elephant with a chap riding on the top of it, the marmot, and he was pulling a roller. And this elephant worked for the public works department, and the African twilly looked at it and said, go look at them tembi. This is the tembi as a word for the elephant, you see. But nothing amazed them after that. This is the sort of thing that they take it all in their stride wherever they go in the world.
But what did you do on your off-duty hours when you were in Ceylon?
Very little.
We could only go to question of transport is a great thing there, to try and get into Colombo for a weekend and stay in a hotel, you know, got a good bath and so forth, but got very little of that. We used to have a leave truck, and we went into Ceylon, this is it.
Did you find that as you were thrown that much closer together and in a more informal situation, unlike peacetime, that you got closer to your African NCOs or indeed to your own officers?
Oh yes, I think the comradeship was far greater, because you all lived just under trees. I mean, wherever you were, your Africans lived around you, and you were all part of them. You got to know them better. That's what life's about. The other interesting thing about Ceylon was seeing the ancient civilization, you know, all their cultures and so forth. And then you say to an African, you go, look, this is a Buddhist temple. And you look at this thing, you see, and they haven't seen this before, but there we are.
Did they?
Oh yes, eventually they think, oh well, these chaps. But the remarks, and they'd say, oh, he'd be Bushman, the same as us. This is the African, you see. And then one particular incident, we came across a lot of these elephants all done up in their, well, we call it Sunday best, you know, they have all these jewels on and all, and people riding up on the tops of them. The African never seen this. You see, they never seen tame elephants. This is another side. But eventually, as I say, I came home from there, from India.
You returned to.
I returned to UK, and then I was home 6 weeks, and I was in the British Liberation Army.
But you returned to Africa in 1947.
Well, again, you see, the army after the war was changed so much. A lot of people were being demobbed. I went on to the staff, Eastern Command at Hounslow as a staff captain. And in those days, you're only allowed 18 months at home. At the end of 18 months, I was given the option of going to West Africa, East Africa, or Singapore. And so I chose West Africa. Well, I'd been out there before. I had a lot of friends there as well, you see. And don't forget, when the war started, the Europeans who were in commerce and so forth, they also joined the Gold Coast Regiment. So I had a lot of friends there as well.
And did you find any changes in the army when you returned?
A lot of the people that I knew had been demobbed, but I think the army was still capable of doing it. They'd got back into a routine, you know, most of them. And they were still, the officers and the NCOs were still there and going on. No, I think you'll find that the army as a whole was still jolly good, you know.
What about African civilians? Was there any change in the prisoner society that you could see going back?
I think eventually the world started changing after the war, and I eventually became Officer IC Records. And the record officers, they were staffed by 96 clerks who all lived in the town. There was no room for them in cantonments. But they all lived in town. This was another side to life. And they're all educated. So I think you'll find that life changed quite a lot, and this is another reason, I think, I don't know, but whilst I was there, they had the Accra riots in 1948. This was the first slight upheaval, I think, that started. This was a change in life that was coming. But the troops were being, most of them were Northern Territory boys still then, but you still had your drivers by then, you know, you still had their vehicles and so forth. And I think you'll find that, on the whole, this they started changing the same as the rest of the world.
Did they show insubordination in any way? How was this changed?
Oh, no. I don't think so, because, as I say, an African, if he knows you, if you're an old soldier, and he'll respect you. He may not respect a civilian who's serving in a shop, something one like that.
So you would see a change in his attitude to Europeans outside the army?
Yeah, he could do. Mm-hmm. But I think you'll find that most of them, they respected you. Mm.
Your actual duties as officer to the Gold Coast Record, so what did this involve?
A record office? Mm. Mm. Well, the job there, one of my jobs actually, was to... We had to lower the army, because you couldn't put everybody out, demob them at all the same go. So one had to take this over a period to get it back to what it would be in peacetime. Mm-hmm. And this is another side, you see.
How was that done? What was the demobilising people?
Well, again, the Gold Coast government were very good in this, because they set up rehabilitation centres, and they also had a civilian department dealing with people leaving the army. And my job as a record officer was keeping a close liaison with all the government departments of the people who were leaving the service.
Do you know what happened to them?
Oh yes, a lot of them went back to their tribes, and others, again, as I pointed out earlier, that they were taken on in mines. They were still looking, because everything was starting up again after the war, and they were taken down as guards or policemen or whatever have you. I said, this is it.
Now, what do the rehabilitation camps do? Or were they more like a transit camp?
More or less a transit camp, but at the same time, trying to teach the chap that whatever, you see, they try and get jobs for them all over the place, wherever they say there's jobs, one up in Tamale, and half a dozen chaps we sent up to Tamale. This is all part of their job, you see. It's nothing you can do as a trades training. I mean, it wouldn't be the same as in the UK, where you can teach a man to be a carpenter or a blacksmith or something like this. This wouldn't work, because they hadn't got the necessary know-how, you see.